Hello and welcome to the first of the Eastern Arc podcast series. It's an opportunity for academics, researchers and others at the three Eastern Arc universities to get together to talk about some of the issues that we face either on a regional, a local, a national or a global basis. And today nothing is more pressing than the coronavirus pandemic. I'm delighted to have on the line three academics who can talk with considerable knowledge and insight on the issues around it, whether that be the origin of the virus, the way it's spread, how we deal with it, and the next steps we need to take in order to transition from the current situation to a more normal state. The three academics are Professor Diana Bell, a Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of East Anglia, UEA, Dr. Gina Reinhardt, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Government at the University of Essex, and Dr. Jeremy Rossman, who's joining us on the line from Chicago. He's an Honorary Senior Lecturer in Virology at the University of Kent. Before looking in more detail at the coronavirus and the COVID-19 that resulted from it, I wanted to take a step back and think about what we mean by a pandemic or a disaster and how that differs from the critical event which caused it. I asked Gina to explain in more detail.
A lot of how disasters unfold really does depend on people's understanding of what's going on and the information that they have, as well as their trust in other people to make decisions for them and to provide information that they need. It might help to clarify a little bit here. The way the community of scholarship that I'm in characterizes a disaster is not something like an earthquake or a bridge falling down. What we say is that those things are critical events that spur disasters. And the disaster is the societal disruption that comes as a result of the critical event. So for this particular context, we know that there are lots of viruses that aren't disasters, right? That there are many viruses that the world has learned to deal with and that doesn't end in a pandemic, right? That the way that this virus is handled and also the characteristics of the virus itself combine together to cause a massive societal disruption right now. And that's the same thing that we notice when we look at earthquakes, for example. What we notice is that depending on the type of leadership, depending on the type of government and the institutions and how quickly decisions are made, how many plans are in place, how well people understand those plans, those are all the sorts of things that determine the extent of a disaster. If people don't trust the folks who are managing the disasters, then that makes the disaster worse. And so people need to trust the information and the organizations that are giving it to them, whether they're the government or NGOs or an international organization. And that's what helps reduce the impact on society.
So trust and good planning are clearly crucial for mitigating the worst effects of any critical event and avoiding a disaster. But what was the critical event that sparked the coronavirus? I asked Jeremy and Diana for their insights from the research they'd done.
So we first saw cases of COVID-19 in December of 2019. And it was originally thought that these cases were coming from a seafood market in Wuhan, in China. Recent epidemiology and sort of tracing the virus says that actually that seafood market may have been the first area in which the transmission of the virus really took off. But we think actual cases may have been present in China, maybe even as early as November of 2019. Now, this starts to get very difficult to sort of trace back, you know, who was infected then, where did that come from? If you're saying a specific market, then it might be a little bit easier to track how the virus sort of transmitted to the human population. But if we're starting to look at individual people back in November, this gets much more difficult. So we don't actually know where the virus came from.
So we don't know where the virus came from, but do we know the animal it originated in? Diana fills us in with the uncertainty that surrounds this.
There hasn't been much discussion about the source in recent days. You know, people have just accepted the dogma that it's bats and pangolins. Actually, I don't believe that. I think that, you know, wherever you look, you'll find new viruses. And it just so happens that a lot of focus has been on bats because we know that they carry other diseases. It was claimed several years after SARS that bats might be a possible source of SARS because they found a virus which was 90% similar, but it wasn't identical. And it's the same with COVID. We haven't found an identical match. And so, you know, as scientists, it could be any of those species that those millions of species that have been through the trade, that the spillovers occurred and has prompted this. Obviously, it's similar to SARS, but, you know, there were no bats in that market. And it's not the right time of year for bats to be flying around because it's cold. And there were no pangolins in that market that I know of. But we do know that a perfect matches for the COVID virus were found in environmental samples collected in that market. Blood from something, fecal matter from something. We don't know. They didn't specify. They just said environmental samples. And there were a large number. And it was only in the wildlife section. It wasn't in the seafood section. We don't know what they tested. We haven't seen a list of the animals they tested or the numbers of individuals that they tested. But we do know that a complete match was in that market. So, you know, that was the source. There's been a lot of conspiracy rubbish circulating. And the fact is, the science shows that the virus was in that market. When they're in those markets, they're stressed, they're immunocompromised. Ironically, many animals that are snared and hunted by dogs and so on in this trade will die before on the spot or thousands, hundreds of miles away or in the trade route system, starved to death or whatever it is. So ironically, it might be the healthiest animals that get to those markets.
Although we don't know the exact species that was the origin of the virus, we do know the circumstances and the situation in which they thrived. Jeremy and Diana explain more.
We think that it's this combination of sort of further encroachment on sort of wild areas of the planet, coupled with these dense urban centers and these wet markets that offer a very robust opportunity for viral emergence and cross-species transfer. Mm-hmm. You know, we see this on a very regular basis with highly pathogenic avian influenza. We see emergence of these viruses into the human population quite regularly.
By this mixing and really poor welfare conditions, non-existent welfare conditions, obviously, you know, crammed together in very close proximity, all excreting on top of one another, certainly breathing on one another. We've created the perfect storm for spillover, not only between those species of pathogens, but you know, to man. It simultaneously brought many of those species to the brink of extinction. And it will happen again unless we stop.
We'll come back to that question about the way that animals are traded and killed and the effect that has on future biodiversity. But for now, I wanted to ask, what made coronavirus so different from the other viruses that had emerged from similar origins?
The short answer is, in terms of viral behavior, what about this virus is different that makes it spread so well? We don't actually know. You know, this virus and the 2002 SARS virus have the same receptor protein on host cells, so that's not different. But for some reason, this virus transmits extremely efficiently in the human population. Now, thankfully, COVID-19 has a much lower case fatality rate than the 2002 SARS virus does. The 2002 SARS virus had perhaps a 15% case fatality rate, whereas this virus may be around 0.5 percent. So that's a really big difference. And when you look at related mm-hmm. coronaviruses, so you have the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome virus. This is another virus that doesn't quite spread as effectively from human to human. But this virus has, you know, about a 30% case fatality mm-hmm. rate. So there's a lot of difference between the how pathogenic, how much disease and how severe the disease is that these different viruses cause, but also how well they spread from mm-hmm. person to person. And this COVID-19 spreads very, very effectively mm-hmm. from person to person, even more effectively than the flu does. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, you know, it has this sort of lower case fatality rate compared to 2002 SARS, compared to MERS, but it's much more dangerous than what mm-hmm. we see with normal strains of flu, or that we saw with the 2009 H1N1 flu pandemic. This strain spread around the world, caused a pandemic, but it had a much lower case fatality rate than even seasonal strains of mm-hmm. influenza, and a much lower case fatality rate than we're seeing with the COVID-19. Now, COVID-19, compared to the 2009 flu pandemic, it spreads more effectively, it causes more disease, it causes more hospitalizations, and it has a higher fatality rate. So this is ending up being a dramatically more severe pandemic, both in terms of the spread as well as the disease that's caused.
A dramatically more severe pandemic. So what are we to do about it? How can we best deal with this? In Gina's original words, how can we prevent this critical event turning into a disaster?
The virus itself is obviously something that we need to figure out how to contend with. But however this virus originated, 6 months ago, none of us knew it existed, and it hadn't caused any disruption to society at that point. At this point, it's caused great disruption to society in every country. And part of that is because we are so globalized and we're so connected to each other. And that means that when the eighth largest economy in the world, which is Italy, shuts its doors, there's no way we can't all feel the effects of that. Part of it is also that there will be a lot of people ill, and a lot of people will also die and have died so far. And that means that there is a lot to manage in this situation. We're not just managing the disease itself. We're managing the entire system that deals with and treats that disease, as well as people's panic levels. We're managing the economic system. We need to manage people's expectations. We need to manage the news, and we need to manage information and make sure that it's correct and make sure that people understand it, make sure that it gets to everyone that needs to know about it. There's a lot to manage in terms of governing a pandemic.
How different countries and the cultures within those countries manage the pandemic is something we'll look at in the next part of our podcast. We'll also look at where we go from here, how we transition to normality again, and also the lessons we can learn and how we can be better prepared the next time a virus adapts and creates a pandemic. But for now, I want to thank my three guests, Professor Diana Bell, Dr. Gina Reinhart, and Dr. Jeremy Rossman. Past episodes of the Eastern Arc podcast will be available on the Eastern Arc site. That's www.easternarc.ac.uk/podcasts. My thanks to all those who are involved in this production, and special mention to Jeff Harvey and Chris Martin of Purple Planet for providing the music. I look forward to seeing you next time on the Eastern Arc podcast.